I am your host, Guy Alvarez. And today we're going to talk about content-fueled business development. How can lawyers harness the power of earned media to fuel new client relationships? Our guest today is John Hellerman. John is the president of Hellerman Communications, an award-winning corporate communications agency positioning professionals to win business and navigate crisis. John and his firm specialize in strategic marketing and content development, crisis and litigation communications, and social influencer and stakeholder relation. John helps the world's most elite professionals and their firms to build and protect their most lucrative relationships. Welcome to the show, John.
Thanks for having me, Guy. Pleasure to be with you.
Pleasure having you. So before we get started, John, I wanted to find out a little bit more about you. How did you get into the world of corporate communications and PR? And specifically, how did you end up in the legal industry working with lawyers and law firms and other professionals?
Oh boy, I'm old, so this goes back a while, but I got my start in PR in the mid-90s after graduating from college, working in Chicago. I had a niche PR agency for business-to-consumer clients, and we did a lot of work in Chicago for restaurants and other sort of hospitality-type clients. I gotta say, I hated it. Pitching, you know, a new chef at a restaurant or a new menu was really just flat out begging for free advertising. And I really struggled with it. But we used to do lawyers at the time. And back in those days, the job really was to get some new lawyer that might have joined the firm. Basically, we'd go and I'd meet with them and find out their birthday and sort of how often they went to lunch at different restaurants that we might have done PR for. Basically, our entire sort of engagement was to get page six gossipy type hits for these lawyer clients. And that means, like, you know, it's so-and-so's birthday today, stuff you'd see in Politico these days, or page six, you know, but who's dining with who? And some of that stuff can be very, very useful. I mean, you know, if you're a lawyer, you can get something in the paper about who's having lunch with you, and it's, you know, it's a corporate executive from IBM or McDonald's or wherever, you know, that could be very powerful. But sure. In general, it was a much different sort of work that you're doing. And I tell you, I remember it like it was yesterday, but one of our clients was the O'Hare Hilton. And at the time, so you know when this was back in the 96 baseball strike. And my job working for the O'Hare Hilton, which was hosting the strike talks, the negotiations, was to get the O'Hare Hilton signage into the, you know, field of view of the cameras and stuff during press conferences that the MLB was hosting. And so it was pretty low level work, but I remember taking down some of my Velcro signs off the dais and sitting on the dais after everyone had left and whatnot, where these two guys from AP. One was a photographer and he had a brand new digital camera that he was uploading with a modem, you know. it was wild. He was uploading pictures that he had just taken. I remember, I'm a camera buff, so I remember talking to him just briefly about like the camera, and he was like, oh, it's this new thing, man, it's like 40 grand. You know, so the price points on those have dropped considerably. But sitting next to him was a reporter who was complaining that he wasn't able to get the current head of the National Labor Relations Board to talk to him. And, you know, the NLRB guy was roaming the halls because of the strike talks. And I had just met about a week earlier the former head of the NLRB who lateraled into a Chicago law firm that was a client of ours. And I had just met with this guy, and, you know, gotten his birthday and talked to him about who we might have lunch with in the near future and that kind of thing for these page six type hits. And I remember just looking over my shoulder and hearing the guy, the reporter, you know, complain. And I asked if talking to the former head of the NLRB would be helpful. And the way that the reporter's eyes lit up, he wanted to talk to this guy. And it was, you know, I had no trouble sort of hooking up a conversation between them. And that was really my first, you know, thought leadership type interview for a lawyer. And I remember thinking, I've got to get into this business because it's so different when the reporters want your content than when you're sort of begging them to cover it.
Yeah. And that's so interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. And from there, I did some research and discovered I was going to build up a big legal practice for the firm I was currently at. Well, I discovered Jaffe Associates, actually. I discovered NALFMA, which back then was the precursor to the Legal Marketing Association. It used to be called the National Association of Law Firm Marketers. I think I joined a listserv that at the time I was probably, 89th member of, something like that. And so it all really came from there. And I started working. I reached out to Richard Levick, who has since passed away this year, unfortunately. But he hired me as sort of one of his chief assistants, associates at Jaffe. A couple years later, we left Jaffe to start Levick Street Communications. And after working with Richard for a handful of years, I left to start Hellerman Communications and have been doing, this sort of thought leadership, PR, and crisis communications consulting for about 20 plus years now.
I love it. That's a great story. All right, well, let's turn to the topic a little bit, content-fueled business development. Tell me, why do you think lawyers can effectively position themselves as thought leaders in their respective market niches? How can they actually do this?
Yeah, well, first of all, as I said from the previous story, it's an important endeavor, and it definitely, the lawyers that we work with, the experts that we work with, definitely have expertise to offer reporters and other types of content creators to help flesh out their stories and the things that they're writing about and communicate to their audiences. So there's definitely a need for folks with this legal expertise. And, first and foremost, there needs to be a comfort level. So that means, understanding what your expertise is, what niche it exists in, and what your consumers, what your clients and prospects most want to hear about. And that could be, a range of things, but for an employment lawyer, it might be on sexual harassment policies or some compliance program or healthcare benefits. But everyone really who's practicing in the law, and if you're a partner or above, associates can do this as well, but there's some other strategies that they might pursue. But for partners especially, they have an expertise in a niche. And the biggest thing is sort of codifying what it is they can talk about, reading the news, being students of the news, following, hot topics and generating some commentary on what's relevant to your clients.
Yeah, I totally agree. Do you find that a lot of lawyers are afraid of being pigeonholed into a particular niche? When you talk to them, like, I can talk about anything, or, pretty broad topics. But what I have found, and I'm sure you have as well, is the more niche, the better sometimes you can be in terms of marketing yourself and sort of positioning yourself as a thought leader.
Yes, the answer is that a lot of these lawyers and other professional service providers as well, it's not just lawyers, but it's accountants, they've worked very hard. They know some very specific things. They have big egos generally, and they don't want to be wrong or contradicted or open themselves up. There's just an adverse sort of reaction to being vulnerable in general. So I think a lot of them do approach this exercise as, I want to be careful because I don't want to say something that someone will laugh at. And I think that that's a very real concern. Typically, it's not very legitimate in the sense that I don't think that the folks that we work with especially are going to say anything that anyone would necessarily laugh at.
Yeah.
But there, and then to your point about the sort of lack of wanting to specialize, that is a definite characteristic, and it is unfortunate because, as you said, the more focused, the more niche-oriented you are, the easier it is to market your expertise because you've identified and limited the universe of target outlets and other distribution channels that you want to communicate through. And you're giving people a very obvious choice or two as opposed to, 10 or 12 choices. And I'll give you, this is sort of the Starbucks example, and I'm sure you've heard it, but, Starbucks markets their coffee. And, that's what you think about when you think about Starbucks. And in addition, you might think about the atmosphere at the Starbucks and the fact that it's chill there. But when you enter the Starbucks, they don't just stop selling you coffee, right? They sell you music cards and gift cards and mugs and all different types of coffee and scones and everything else that they sell. So there's this disconnect with lawyers where if they feel like they're only talking about one thing, they feel, I say sometimes, that that might be the only thing anyone ever seeks them out for. And I don't think that's the case, although I think it is very valuable that you create that sort of reputation around one particular thing so that the people who do need it know where to find you and know who to call.
I totally agree. So what are some key strategies that lawyers can use to leverage earned media and to reach a wider audience and communicate their knowledge and their experience and their insights?
Well, that's a great question. So, you know, there's a number of ways when you talk about, like, what is the content that we're talking about? And that could be, you know, getting interviewed and being quoted in an actual article, publishing your own article, bylining an article, something like this, appearing on a podcast, an award, Q&A, you know, an op-ed, all different types sort of thought leadership. And there's sort of a pretty simplistic formula that, you know, not to be jovial about it, but it's, you know, identify a hot topic, create content around the hot topic, publish the content around the hot topic, and then share out that content. And I think that that's probably the important thing in terms of leveraging the earned media into a wider audience are two things. One is that a lot of clients, a lot of lawyers see the generation of the content as sort of the end point. You know, I got quoted today in the Wall Street Journal, and they're happy about that and patting themselves on the back, and that's about all they do. And, you know, tomorrow is a new day, and so the article that appeared in the Wall Street Journal today is now, you know, on the bottom of a birdcage or, you know, in the garbage, and they're starting from scratch. Whereas really the power comes from not just appearing in the Wall Street Journal on a particular Tuesday, but then sharing out that article with your entire sort of network, definitely sharing it out to relevant prospects and clients to let them know that you appeared in the Wall Street Journal. Posting it to your bio, you know, appears frequently as an expert for the media in the Wall Street Journal. Making people aware of the fact that you were quoted in the Wall Street Journal is almost more important than what you said when you were quoted in the Wall Street Journal. That's a very important thing to do.
I couldn't agree more. And I sometimes see firms or lawyers that spend a lot of time and effort, and, you know, even if it's not appearing on a publication, but, like, you know, creating a white paper or a study, and, you know, they create it, they send it out to their email database, and that's it. They forget about it.
Right.
And I'm like, wait a minute, you spent all this time and energy creating this, and you're just a once and done. And to me, it's just such a waste, basically.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, like, and, you know, when you create any sort of content, like if you're publishing an article or you're going to give a speech at a conference and you have a PowerPoint deck, all of those things can be leveraged into other things. So, you know, the PowerPoint deck can be turned into a byline article that you would then go get published. Maybe you create a Q&A out of it. Maybe there's a blog post that you publish on your own channel about it. Definitely, you know, the sort of tweeting, hey, I'm going to do this, and hey, I did this kind of notifications. Those are all critically important, I think, in addition to the actual creation of the piece of content itself, for sure.
Yeah. Do you want to start a successful podcast that will generate leads for your law firm? At Good2Be Social, we work with many different law firms and help them to produce and promote their podcasts. Podcasts today are more popular than ever. In fact, today's internet users routinely use podcasts on a monthly, weekly, or even daily basis to stay informed and be entertained. As this medium continues to grow, law firms don't want to fall behind and need to move beyond traditional written content and onto the digital airwaves. Unfortunately, when it comes to podcasting, many legal marketers aren't sure about where to start. With our latest ebook, The Law Firm Guide to Podcasting, readers can learn how to choose a format, a topic, and a name that will get you noticed, how to select and reach out to potential guests, the technology and the recording basis you know to produce a successful show, as well as how to measure the success of your podcast. So hurry now, go to the Good2Be Social website and look for the Law Firm Guide to Podcasting ebook. Have you found that, you know, when I got started doing what we do, I would talk to lawyers and they would say, well, I don't really have time to create content, right? I'm just focused on being a good lawyer. People know I'm a good lawyer, and that's going to drive leads and get me new clients or more business for my existing clients. I feel that's changed now, and you're starting to see more and more the connection between creating thought leadership content and how it can help to drive leads and encourage other business development efforts. Now, what is your perspective on that? And have you seen that change since you've been doing what you do?
I have, yeah. And I think that you're right. It has to do with the way the social media platforms have sort of changed and increased people's reach. But, you know, there's more of an effort now to be able to get the word out. One step back is that, you know, when you talk about leveraging different pieces of content, you know, one of the key strategies too is to use the opportunity to create the content as a way to participate in business development activities. Well, for instance, I was going to be interviewed today by you, and it's afternoon when we're talking now. And so this morning, I made a couple calls, two prospects and a client, to just sort of tell them that I was going to be on this podcast with you and to ask them for a minute or two and just pick their brains about if I was on the right track with what I might talk about or if they wanted to give me any sort of suggestions. And I got to be honest and say that as interested as I was in their opinion, the purpose of the calls was really to let them know that I was someone being sought after by a legitimate media source. And so I think that, you know, one of the leveraging strategic collaborating type of tools is that all of these things can help you do things that I might not have otherwise picked up the phone to make those calls because I had nothing really of value right to share or say or ask. And so, you know, if you have the opportunity to create an article for Law 360, you know, picking up the phone and inviting a prospect or a client to co-byline it with you is really terrific because, you know, you pick up the phone and you're going to have something good to share. So you don't have to worry about, you know, not having anything valuable to share. You're going to be offering someone the opportunity to, you know, showcase their expertise. And hopefully, you know, that behavior, maybe you call in that particular article or opportunity, you know, maybe you make six calls and it's the sixth person that you invite to buy one with you who says, yeah, sure, I can do it. And in the meantime, the first five might have said no, but maybe you were able to say, well, that's, you know, that's too bad. Maybe next time, how about we grab a cup of coffee and we haven't seen each other in a while? And so it's really an opportunity to sort of grease the activity wheel for business development, you know?
Can you provide us with a couple more examples of how successful earned media campaigns that help lawyers establish their thought leadership position and generate new business opportunities?
Sure. I mean, you know, there's dozens and dozens of examples, but generally speaking, you know, we recently put out a large survey in the maritime industry for a client that went out in the fall last October and generates a lot of media interest in October for Cyber Security Awareness Month, but really sort of carries the firm and the practice through the course of the year because the survey itself, the results, the information have showcased the practice's leadership in the area. And so now when there are security breaches in maritime or other sort of events, these partners from the firm are generally on the radar and, you know, Rolodex is an old term, but on the call sheets for these reporters. And so that's generating a lot of interest, you know, over the course of the year until the next survey, you know, is done. So that's one example. Have had other clients sort of all over the news for different litigation matters. The Trump indictments have created a lot of opportunities for some white collar clients to generate awareness for their expertise and how that might be handled, et cetera. You know, those are kind of maybe two examples. You know, one of my favorite stories around this guy is back in my early days when I was in my late 20s, my first sort of real unsupervised, you know, going to lead the account client was Bartlett Beck, which is, you know, as you probably know, premier litigation boutique. And I was doing my due diligence meetings, you know, meeting with different partners and happened to be sitting with Fred Bartlett in his office. And for anyone who doesn't know Fred, you know, sort of a legend of the bar. At the time, he was, I think, probably late 50s, early 60s, like, you know, just big burly chested kind of West Point guy. And he had me in his office and he was sort of pacing around his office talking to me. He was, had this little like Louisville Slugger bat in his hand. It's pretty menacing. And, you know, at one point he pointed over to his desk with his bat and said, you know, I have 30 cases sitting on my desk. I can only do 10 a year. And, you know, was sort of bragging about his success, which I thought was great. And obviously the more successful you are and the more busy you are, and this is a point I want to underscore as well, is, you know, a lot of these lawyers think that they're, you know, they don't need this. I think this goes to your earlier question, but they tend to think like maybe they're busy and they don't need this. And maybe it'll be some sort of activity that they'll participate in when they're less busy. But especially when it comes to thought leadership and earned media, you know, when you're busy is when you're interesting. And so what one of the most awful things that happens is that these lawyers sort of lose their pipeline. And that's when they want to start marketing. And that's when they really have nothing to talk about.
Yep.
And so when you're busy and you're in the thick of things, that's really when it is most important and you can be most successful sort of being the thought leader about those things. This Fred Bartlett story, you know, he pointed over at his desk and said, I can only do 10 cases. I have 30 to choose from and whatnot. And I remember thinking, you know, it's not so great for me and my team when we generate opportunities for lawyers who say they want them and then they kind of disappear, which happens, you know, on occasion. And I remember asking Fred at the time, interrupting him, and I got really nervous. But I said, you know, what do you need us for? Sort of stunned him. He said, what do you mean? I said, well, you just said, you know, you have 30 cases on your desk. You can only do 10 a year. What do you need a marketing firm for? I don't understand. You know, I don't want you to do stuff and then have you disappear, you know? And he kind of looked at me and looked back at his desk and, you know, rubbed the bat in his hand a couple times. And then he just said, well, I don't want to pick 10 cases from 30. I want to pick 10 from 100. And I'll tell you, it was like a bolt in my head. I mean, it really did solidify for me the purpose of all this, which is not just to bring in business, but to bring in more valuable business. So no matter how busy you are, you know, you want to be participating in this effort so that you can bring in higher dollar, higher value, more exciting to you work.
What a great story. Yeah. And that's so true. So, John, you know, there's a lot of lawyers that probably get what you're saying, but they're not really sure how to get started. How do you get started with earned media? How do you get started with PR? You know, do you go out and hire John Hellerman or do you hire someone internal? Like, what are steps that are required? Of course.
Every partner who wants PR should come and hire me for sure. well, the first thing I would say is to do a little bit of some research about your niche and identify, you know, who are the 4 to 6 competitors of yours? And those should be, maybe 2 of them should be aspirational. So let's say you're not Chambers ranked, but who are the Chambers 1, Chambers 2 band ranked folks in your practice, in your niche? And what are the sorts of things they're doing? You know, what topics are they talking about? And what outlets are they appearing? We did some studies recently and it's interesting. Not every, you know, Chambers 1 ranked partner has media or a lot of media. But many of them do, I should say most of them do. And the amount of media that the Chambers 1 ranked partners have versus the Chambers 2 ranked partners have on average is about 2x. So Chambers 1 ranked folks are utilized as expert sources for the media about twice as often as Chambers 2 ranked folks. That doesn't mean that everyone is or everyone has that average. In generally speaking terms, you know, the more successful lawyers are both more sought out by the media, and I think that they use the media to become more successful. So the first thing is to sort of look around, pick some examples of who you might want to imitate, and then from there, an in-house public relations team, which many of these big corporate law firms obviously have, or an agency like mine, can really go from there to help create a campaign of, you know, universal targets that make sense to strive for, and then, you know, help develop content ideas.
All right. Well, John, we've run out of time, unfortunately. I could talk to you all day. I find what you say fascinating. But before I let you go, what would be a word of advice or a leave behind that you would leave for our audience?
Boy, I tell you, the number one thing I would say to make this effort more worthwhile to everybody would be to include a plan to collaborate in the creation of the content with clients and prospects. the mere invitation to invite them is goodwill invitation. It starts you talking about whatever it is that they might be working on otherwise. And if they happen to elaborate with you, then you're just going to expand the network of folks that might see that content at the end of the day. So it's just positive all the way around. And oftentimes that relationship can be more important than creating a piece of content is anyway. So just having that conversation with clients and prospects is very useful. And the development of content can be a tool to make those sorts of conversations happen.
I love it. That is fantastic advice. That's one of the reasons why I do this podcast. Yeah, one is to create content, but two is to enhance or create new relationships. So I completely agree with you. Well, John, thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure having you. To our audience, thank you for your time listening to us today. If you enjoyed today's episode,